The fourth case for argument this morning is United States against Clark. Ms. Lewis.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Catherine Lewis on behalf of the United States. The question before the Court this morning is whether in this prosecution for making and using a false document or writing, venue is proper in the district where the document was prepared. And the answer to that question is yes. The district court in this case erred when it dismissed the indictment and ruled essentially that the crime of making a false document does not even begin until essentially is completed by filing the false document. And that ruling unduly limits venue law. In this case, the general provisions of Section 3237 apply, and a crime for making a false document or writing can be tried in any district in which the crime was begun, continued, or completed. And in this case, when you look at the face of the indictment, it's clear that it alleges that the false documents were made and used in St. Clair County, which is within the Southern District of Illinois. In this case, there was a business, Clark Trucking, and that did construction work over in Missouri, but the place of the business was in East St. Louis, Illinois, in St. Clair County, and the issue is whether certified payrolls that were prepared and submitted by Clark Trucking were false. The drivers worked out of that East St. Louis office. Their payroll was prepared in the East St. Louis office. They were paid out of that office. And when the certified payrolls were prepared to be submitted to the general contractor, although the general contractor was over in Missouri, the payrolls were prepared and the false documents, or the allegedly false documents, were prepared within the Southern District of Illinois. And where those documents are created is important. When you look at the verb test and you look at the essential conduct elements, and while the verb test is not determinative, it can be useful, the only verb in the elements of the crime are the verbs making and using.
I have to say, as a former English major, I love the idea of a verb test. It really, I guess, the test that focuses on the action in question, perhaps.
Yes, Your Honor. And in this type of prosecution, where the action of making and using the false document occurs is an important factor for this court to consider. And the indictment is clear on its face that it is alleging that the documents were made and used or caused to be made and used in St. Clair County within the Southern District of Illinois. Also, in a venue case, venue is only improper if the only acts in a district do not provide evidence of the elements of the charged crime. Here, the elements of the charged crime are making and using a false document, and you can't say that there is no evidence that would have been in the Southern District of Illinois to support a prosecution showing that those crimes or that those certified payrolls were false. Essentially, the district court's ruling was erroneous when the court found that Pat Clark took a substantial risk that he might commit a crime, but that he didn't even commit a crime until the false documents were submitted. The district court continued that if the general contractor never even submitted those documents to the federal government, that there wouldn't have even been the beginning of a crime, and that it was just essentially an attempt. And that ruling was erroneous and unduly limits venue prosecutions. The district court essentially warned the government that the case was either going to be dismissed because the indictment was insufficient or that it would be dismissed at the end of the government's case if the government went to trial because the district court could find no crime that had been committed by Patrick Clark, and that ruling was erroneous. Again, when you look at the face of the indictment, it's clear that it alleges that there was a crime committed in the Southern District of Illinois, and therefore venue within the Southern District of Illinois was proper. And so if there are no questions, the government respectfully requests that the district court's order dismissing the indictment be vacated and that this case be remanded for further proceedings in the district court.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Connors.
May it please the Court, distinguished colleague. I am Neil Connors for the defendant appellee, William Patrick Clark, in this case. When I first came into contact with this case, one of the first things I did was to read the six-page indictment, which contains the 10-count allegations of false official statement to the federal government in this case. And it's chock full of information about the nature and circumstances of how Mr. Clark was required by a federal statute to provide a payroll record to the general contractor operating in the state of Missouri to rebuild the 6440 highway under the auspices of or through the involvement of the Missouri Department of Transportation and the Federal Highway Administration, which was providing the funds. The district court determined and specifically said that there was no hook for an offense to have occurred. I believe the judge was correct, but I would edit his decision by just saying that submission in this case was a prerequisite to getting paid. This case is about not just about moving dirt, which is what Mr. Clark did in the state of Missouri exclusively, notwithstanding the fact that he had a place of business in East St. Louis.
But the 1001 offense doesn't happen without a few things happening. First of all, the statements have to be prepared, and then they do have to be submitted to the United States. But I think it artificial to say that making the false writing that is then submitted isn't an essential part of the offense. And if so, the venue statute allows venue either in the Eastern District of Missouri, could have been there, or in the Southern District of Illinois.
One of the problems, Judge Wood, using the verb test strictly in terms of making is that you have to search for what aspect of communication triggers the offense against the federal government in this case.
Well, it completes the offense. I might amend what you're saying. I mean, a lot of offenses involve a number of steps that you have to take, and only when they're all done have you finished violating the law.
And that appeared to be the district court's approach. The district court said the offense is committed where the last act necessary for the crime exists. And the problem with that is that's not what the statute says. It's not what Section 3237 says. 3237 says the crime is committed where any step takes place.
Well, Chief Judge Easterbrook, one of the things that has to be looked at in this case is the first 9 counts of the indictment. Of course, distinguishable from count 10, in which Mr. Clark ostensibly appeared in front of a notary 2 years after the original payroll statements were submitted and made. One of the problems, I think, is technically, if you look in terms of the act of making, is that what is it that's defined in the English language by making? Is it the execution of the statement? Is it the rendition or the compilation of the statement that we're looking at here? And on this point, I think it's significant that Mr. Clark's secretary ostensibly signed his signature.
Well, that's a whole different point. You go off on that line in your brief. But we're here on venue, and at least as I understand the case, that's the only thing we're here on, whether Mr. Clark personally has committed an offense, whether it's his company, whether it's his secretary, whether any number of other things are going on, strikes me as a set of questions for another time and another day. I mean, I saw that you were starting to say, well, maybe it was the secretary who put these records together, but I don't see what that has to do with venue.
Well, I think that it questions what is the making in this case. Other cases, for example, the Travis case, which has been the subject of whether I should have cited that case or not. Travis was about a federal statute where the actual filing, as required by state statute, was made by an individual, and the filing is the act of making the statement. I think where Judge Murphy was driving in this case is that the Clark case is about submitting the records. Related to Travis, there is a federal statute, the Davis-Bacon Related Acts, which specifically set forth the requirements that, in this case, a subcontractor, submit these records, these payroll records, for payment. And I think that what that points to in these cases, and I believe this court has also had some precedent, is it really begs the question, what is the act of making? I point the court to direct the attention of the court, if you please, to the Ringer case, in which statements which were verbal in nature.
There's also a maintenance requirement, right, for the records?
There is, Your Honor. It is a compliance provision. This act, this, if you will, association of Missouri Department of Transportation and the Federal Highway Administration required compliance with the payroll in order to get the money. And the maintenance for inspection purposes of the records was posited in Missouri in this case, where the construction project was occurred. I wish to also mention to the court that notwithstanding the fact that Mr. Clark had his business in East St. Louis, this was an on-site project exclusively performed. All the duties were required by contract to occur right there in Missouri. And such, when I read the indictment, I thought surely there will be something which would have developed more than simply the existence of his office and this other appearance in Count 10 and before the notary to posit this case directly for venue in the Southern District of Illinois. Finding none, I brought this this motion, thinking that the court would be able to refine what it means to, in this case, make a statement. In this case, it's a written statement. And I think written statements are a little more difficult, more problematic, perhaps, than they were for the court in the Ringer case, where you had a defendant in a jail verbalizing information in Kentucky about events occurring in Indiana, and this court found that because of the impact.
Okay.
And I will say that I do think there is significant precedent, some of it's out-of-circuit precedent, for examining the contacts of the individuals involved, more akin to a civil procedure analysis. But there's also tests that have been looked at in terms of the interrelationship between what we're really talking about. Mr. Clark was required to conform with the prevailing wage doctrine. And that's a state-driven concept. Obviously, the federal government has supervisory review of that in terms of payment. But what this payroll provision sought to do was to require that the prevailing wage doctrine for the state of Missouri was met. I would respectfully ask that Judge Murphy's decision affirming that you affirm his decision dismissing the 10-count criminal indictment against the defendant. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Clark. Sorry, Mr. Connors.
Yes.
I apologize,
identity
Mr.
of
Connors.
Attorney and client.
Began with C. It's too confusing. Anything further, Ms. Lewis?
Yes, Your Honor, just a few points quickly. First of all, this case is not about submitting the documents, and it's not about where the work was done. Where the work was done is largely irrelevant, because what this is really about is that allegedly Mr. Clark was stealing from his drivers. He was required to pay them $35 an hour under the federal prevailing wage requirements under the Davis-Bacon Act. He did not pay them $35 an hour, according to the indictment. He paid them closer to $13 to $14 an hour, instead presumably pocketing the rest of the money for himself.
Or simply made a low bid and didn't make anything other than the normal profit on the job. So the taxpayers saved the money. But it's completely irrelevant. If there's a statute that says the taxpayers insist on paying this, well, then they have to pay it.
That's correct, Your Honor. And essentially what this was Mr. Clark allegedly stealing from victims in Illinois, his own employees, employees of his office, which was in Illinois.
He has been through this. That
yes,
he may have been saving the taxpayers' money, but it's money the taxpayers want to spend. There's nothing in the indictment which suggests that he was stealing from anybody.
I believe that there is an allegation in the indictment that he was stealing, Your Honor, but
there's an allegation that he did not pay the legally required wage, and he lied about it.
Yes.
That differs from an allegation that he's stealing somebody's money.
I believe, Your Honor, and I
correctly characterize what these things are.
I believe the first paragraph of the indictment says that he engaged in a scheme to steal the money, although that is irrelevant to the issue of venue. The question, again, is what is making? And other circuits have found that preparing a document and preparing it and signing it is making a document. And that's really what the issue is today.
Well,
it's
why,
not
don't, why don't maybe you reach a little too far. Why don't we say making is when he sent the email with the anticipation or reasonable expectation that it will be received? Why isn't that an approach the court might want to take?
That could be an approach that the court would take, but those emails would have been sent from his business in Illinois. So they would have been made from Illinois over to the contractor in Missouri. So even if you took that approach, the venue was still proper in the Southern District of Illinois.
No, I'm not questioning the outcome, but I'm just suggesting the sweep of what you're asking for and asking us to determine what the making should be. Maybe it should be the act of a person or an individual who does something where you can reasonably expect that it'll reach the intended recipient. Not just the simple signing in an office with no further action.
Correct, Your Honor. I see that my time is up, but I would answer the question.
Well,
if you'd
we're
like.
Talking, you can talk.
Yes. This is not a situation where somebody just made a document and filed it away in a drawer, as the district court seemed to use that hypothetical during the motion hearing. This is a situation where it was actually submitted to somebody for maintenance and for transmission to the Missouri Department of Transportation. And so you could say that the act of sending it to someone who is going to then provide it to the government is what is making the document. And I think that is similar to an analogy from the Allison Engine case, which was a False Claims Act case, but it is analogous, where they found that a subcontractor who submits a false document to a general contractor, knowing that the general contractor will, or intending that the general contractor use that document to receive payment from the government, mm-hmm. that could sustain. And so I think that this would be analogous to that.
Judge Flom's question. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Connors, we appreciate your willingness to take the appointment and your assistance to us as well as to your client. Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.